At his speech last night before Congress, the president's call to duty, I want you to be more competitive.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the midday update from Marketplace.org. It's Wednesday, January 26th. Coming up, political and corporate leaders converge in the Switzerland snow. The hits keep coming on the football field, yet those hits are underscoring the need to make the sport a little less jarring. And grab some fries. School's in session. That's later. But first, in his State of the Union address last night, President Obama painted broad brushstrokes, education, government spending, and the nation's huge budget deficits. But he also pointed to specific ideas, such as corporate tax reform.
To help businesses sell more products abroad, we set a goal of doubling our exports by 2014. Because the more we export, the more jobs we create here at home. Already our exports are up.
The idea of lowering corporate taxes will be popular with some and really unpopular with others. Marketplace's Elisa Roth is with us in our New York bureau to talk about it. Hi, Elisa.
So the thing about corporate taxes, they're supposed to be a way to help the economy grow without making the deficit worse. The government could cut corporate taxes, which would mean that companies would have more money to spend elsewhere. But the overhaul would also eliminate the deductions and the loopholes that let a lot of companies avoid a lot of taxes. It's also a way for the administration to seem, or even really to be, business friendly, or more business friendly anyway. And it would help the U.S. be more competitive because our corporate tax code is so complicated. It's so full of loopholes. And the rates are so high. The top figure is 35%, which is one of the highest rates in the world.
Some U.S. companies, Elisa, complain about how they get taxed on money that they earn overseas. What did the president say about that?
Well, the thing is, the U.S. makes companies pay taxes on money that they earn abroad, whereas most major countries don't. And businesses say that gives their competition in places like Japan and the U.K. a big advantage.
All right. Marketplace's Elisa Roth in New York. Elisa, thanks.
You're welcome.
The first big private equity initial public offering of the year happens today. The ratings company Nielsen is set to go public with more than 70 million shares. And as Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports, its market performance could set the tone for other privately held companies looking to become public.
Many people remember Nielsen as the company behind the diaries, where people wrote down everything they watched on TV. Today, Nielsen's into way more than television.
It's just growing exponentially.
Peter Harvey runs Intellidyne, a boutique ad tracking agency.
Now they're into all these analytics services within the internet.
Nielsen brings in around $5 billion a year, and Harvey says advertisers are clamoring for ever more detailed information about who their content reaches. David Menlo, president of IPO Financial, says Nielsen will face serious competition over the next few years.
Nielsen is basically the best of breed within its field at this point. You certainly wouldn't want to make that a statement that has a long shelf life with technology advancing the way it does almost on a minute-by-minute basis.
Menlo also says other companies, including Toys R Us and the hospital chain HCA, will be watching Nielsen's IPO to gauge the market for their own public offerings. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, January 26th. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. You can follow me on Twitter at Radio Chio. And don't forget you can get the latest look at the markets by checking out the numbers section at our website, marketplace.org. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. The World Economic Forum opened in Davos, Switzerland this morning with dignitaries from all over the world arriving in that small town to talk free markets and economic recovery. This year, a record number of attendees from emerging markets are at that summit, including the largest ever delegation from China. Marketplace's Europe correspondent Stephen Beard reports.
China's enthusiasm for Davos is, on the face of it, puzzling. The World Economic Forum is a temple of free market capitalism. For decades, Davos has preached the benefits of democracy and deregulation. China's communist government and state-directed capitalism seem embarrassingly out of place. But Professor Chris Rowley of Cass Business School says the Chinese want a major presence in Davos to show off their economic power.
they feel they need to be taken seriously as a world player. I mean, it's not just the sweatshop of the world producing thousands of cheap T-shirts. They see themselves as an important economic entity in their own right. So it's to reflect that glory almost.
Fewer American politicians and business people are expected in Davos this year. The worry is that schmoozing and partying in a Swiss ski resort may not go down well when there are hard times and high unemployment back home in the US. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Let's speak with one of those corporate leaders attending the forum in Davos. Beth Comstock is Senior Vice President of General Electric, and she's joining us on the line this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your sense of how corporate leaders feel about the global economy? Is it making a comeback?
I think the mood is much more optimistic. Yeah, I think people feel the economy is coming back. I think we would still describe it as multi-speed, meaning some economies are moving at a much faster pace than others. So the optimism is a bit of a spectrum.
Where is the U.S. in that multi-speed factor?
It's a slower speed. It's not the slowest, but it's a slower speed certainly than China, than India, than Brazil.
What about your company, GE? Truly multinational in this economic environment, is there a case for optimism?
There sure is a case for optimism. I mean, I think what you see, GE is a global company, as you pointed out. A big shift for us recently has been to focus much more of our research and technology resources on innovating in a country like India to solve healthcare problems in India, and then ask ourselves, where else can we take this idea, but starting foremost for the challenges in the country.
President Obama tapped your boss, Jeff Immelt, to head up this new White House advisory panel, right, on jobs and competitiveness. Is that a good thing for GE? How does that work into the company's sort of mantra?
Jeff has been involved with President Obama for the past couple of years on his economic advisory board. In Jeff's mind, it was a natural extension to stay involved and to play a role of bringing business together with government.
Does that paint the company into a corner politically, do you think, if there's maybe a Republican comes into the White House?
I know we're not doing this as a political action. Jeff has been very loud and clear in saying he says he's a Republican. So this isn't about politics. It's about focusing on the economy, making sure that America can be competitive in the places it can best be competitive. And GE wants to play a role, just as we do in other economies. Not every country can be great at everything, but we want to make sure that that America can stay competitive.
Beth Comstock, Senior Vice President at General Electric. Beth, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, security has been stepped up at airports all across Russia following Monday's suicide bombing that killed 35 people and left dozens more injured. The added measures could become permanent in Russia, but not necessarily around the globe. From Moscow, Peter Van Dyke reports.
Russia's president says security at Russian airports may have to rise to levels seen in Israel, where airport security perimeters sometimes extend far beyond the terminal buildings. U.S. and Western security officials say the type of bombing that occurred in Moscow could just as easily have happened in the U.S. But since Americans are already unhappy with the degree of intrusiveness at airport security, Philip Baum, the editor of Aviation Security International magazine, says the political will for more American security measures does not exist.
Airport owners are trying to encourage off-airport business onto airport grounds. And it does present a major security challenge that you cannot guard 100% against.
So while Russian officials say the airport attack highlights a different threat that security measures will have to adapt to, for now, US travelers are unlikely to see stricter controls. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
A new hire to report at chipmaker Intel. Pop musician will.i.am is the new corporate creative director. Now, according to the company, the singer will be contributing to the development of laptops, tablets, and smartphones, all in the name of keeping focus on the world's culture of youth and how the youth around the world communicate. Now, let's keep it formal, though. In the future, you need to just call him Mr. I.M. You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, January 26th. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Check out our website for the latest numbers, updated podcasts, and a lot of fun and excitement, too, such as voting on what airline fee is coming down the pike to help airlines stay afloat. All that at our website, marketplace.org. The federal government isn't the only one facing difficult budget decisions. A lot of states are in hot financial water as well. The state of Illinois in particularly bad shape. To close its $15 billion budget gap, that state has raised income and corporate taxes by more than 50%. And now New Jersey is hoping to cash in on that. The Garden State started this advertising campaign to steal fed-up businesses from Illinois. Reporter Janet Babin has more.
New Jersey's broadcast ads throw some not-so-subtle barbs Illinois' way.
Have you had enough of Illinois' outrageous tax increases that stifle businesses and cause jobs? Then move your business to New Jersey.
New Jersey's corporate tax rate is 0.5% lower than Illinois' new higher rate. But political advisor Charles Gabriel at Capital Alpha Partners says you also have to consider the Garden State's income tax rate.
Spin lies in the hands of the advertiser. They can gloss over the fact that they still have a higher personal income tax rate than the state of Illinois.
According to the Tax Foundation, people who make more than $40,000 a year will pay higher income taxes in New Jersey than in Illinois. The state's two governors are lobbing insults at each other through the media, and Governor Christie heads to Illinois next week to make his case to businesses in person. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Well, the Super Bowl is set. It's the Steelers and the Packers a week from Sunday, and come that day, there'll be one last chance for the season to see some big hits on the football field. Now, those hits are exactly what some former players and player advocates say is wrong with the game. It's too violent, they say, and there are too many risks of head and brain injuries. Staff writer Ben McGrath has a story about it in this week's New Yorker magazine. He's with us now. Hi, Ben.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. So how much of an influence does the sheer violence of football contribute to its popularity? Do people like it because there's so many hits?
I think people do. I mean, certainly historically, that was what drew people to the game. I also think that people relate to the violence on a kind of notional level, and I don't think they really understand just how violent it sometimes is.
I'm curious how these brain injuries square with the amount of money that the NFL takes in.
Your question reminds me of something that James Harrison on the Pittsburgh Steelers said when he was first villainized back in October after concussing a couple of players in the Cleveland Browns, and he said, "I try to hurt people, I don't try to injure people." And I think that the perceived distinction between hurting and injuring is kind of the dicey zone that the NFL and football tries to slide through.
We've heard from some players, some of whom are in your article, as a matter of fact, who say they wish they'd never played the game. Do others believe the big paychecks make it worth the chance of injury?
Oh, I think there are plenty of players who think it's worth it. Certainly the players who are playing now are paid a lot better than the man who I talked to who said he wished he'd never played the game, never earned multi-million-dollar contracts. And I think the guys now look at it as this is something we go into knowing the risks. And one of the questions that the sport is facing is, well, just how well do we know the risks?
How much does the league figure the overall cost analysis to have all these injuries?
Well, I think that depends on whether we think that the public's reaction to these injuries is ultimately going to affect its interest in the sport. One of the things that the league worry about is down the line is the, you know, maybe fans are okay with watching this, but the parents of high school players are not so cool with their kids playing. And maybe the game in a generation from now dries up. You don't have as many people who grew up playing the game, and therefore they're less likely to watch the game. So I think it's a long-term cost perspective. Will the game still be the most popular sport in America in 25 years?
Ben McGrath, staff writer for The New Yorker. Thanks.
Thank you.
And finally, McDonald's University in China trains restaurant managers to be all they can be. But getting in is no happy meal. The school's acceptance rate is lower than Harvard's. Harvard accepts about 7% of the students who apply. McDonald's University accepts 1%. I guess you are pretty much guaranteed a job if you graduate from McCollege. Also, I hear the food's better. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Again, follow me on Twitter at Radio Chio. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.